Blog Talk Radio.
Reach out of space.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we are bringing to you a book that came out not too long ago, 2012, about 5 years old.
I wasn't done talking about Punisher. I'm sorry.
Mark's like, damn the intro. We got scheduling to do, and I should have known better. Honest to goodness,
Mark.
I should have known better.
I'm just kidding. There's no date yet given for the Punisher series. It's just November, so we'll revisit this conversation when I have a specific date.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do that. That's pretty.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Were you introducing the show? Please don't let me stop you.
2012. All right, 5 years ago. The book that we're going to be talking about has now been adapted into a movie that just released, I believe it was this past weekend or this past week, where Charlize Theron, took the lead role. And the name of the book is The Coldest City. The name of the movie is Atomic Blonde. So tonight we're going to give you – I'll be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen – here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read the solicit, maybe throw in a tiny little few things here and there. I don't even know if I'll do that, but I know I'm going to read you the solicit from the actual website. And then me, Ronnie Adams, Mark Radlich are going to discuss what we thought of the book. Just real quick, I want to go ahead and give a double extra top secret spoiler alert. Because if you have not seen the movie, my assumption is that since this is the book based off of that the movie is based off of, we're probably going to spoil some things. Plus, I can tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a spy thriller. Okay, so be prepared. You know, we may be discussing the big, you know, something or other that happens here, the big something or other that happens there. These are big points in a good thriller movie that you don't want spoiled. So I would suggest that if you want to watch the movie first and come back and listen to our podcast, I have absolutely no problem with it, and I think the boys here would agree. Let's go ahead and bring on the boys. You heard Mark the Schedule himself, Mark Radlich, the Patriarch. Mark Radlich, how do you do this evening?
Kevin Spacey is kind of...
Kevin Spacey's what?
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze. There we go.
There it is. Yeah, that's it. Jeez.
Bruce Willis. Fuck. Hi, I'm good.
Bruce Willis is dead. He's dead, Jim. He's dead. My goodness. Well,
anything else you'd like to ruin?
One more twist ending. Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
No, oh, come on.
See?
Come on. Jeez.
It's true. Well, please watch the movie.
Ronnie Adams, my good friend from North Kakalaki, How you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good until you said North Kakalaki.
Kakalaki! Yeah, well.
Now I'm doing even better.
All right, that's good. That's good to hear. So, okay. Now, well, I had no idea. There is a prequel to this book. I'm looking at whatever you pulled this off of, Mark. In 2012, Johnston wrote... Johnston
Where
wrote
you pulled this
city.
From, Mark? Wait a minute now. Let me answer that. I pulled this from the Wikipedia page for Anthony Johnston because there is no specific Wikipedia page for The Coldest City. There
okay.
is, however, a Wikipedia for Atomic Blonde, but that deals with the film.
All right. Now, so what they're saying here, I'm going to read this. In 2012, Johnston wrote The Coldest City, an original hardback graphic novel in the Cold War espionage genre, intended to be the first in a series of books all set in Berlin during the Cold War. Okay, so he went back and wrote a prequel, The Coldest Winter, which was released 4 years later. So this is one of them guys that goes backwards, wrote a prequel, both published by Oni Press. Okay, boy, I wonder – I hope they – I'm gonna hold my criticism right now. We'll get into this here in just a few seconds. So tonight we're talking The Coldest City. Our creators on this book, as already alluded to, we have here we go. Hold on just a second. I've got the creators, I promise. What was his name again? Did you say Anthony Johnston?
Written by Anthony Johnston and illustrated by Sam Hott.
Okay. All right, so there are your creators. As far as illustrations go, I can tell you right now, the book is not like neck deep in color. This is a completely black and white book. completely.
Not a rainbow of illustrations. No.
No.
Black
this,
and white.
This couldn't have been done. I mean, we're getting to the art style. See, I'm jumping already. I'm already jumping ahead of myself. Let's go to the format that I said. So I've got the creators out of the way. Let's go ahead and first, I kind of gave away why this book. I mean, Mark, was there anything else, any other reason why you chose this book other than the fact that it coincides with that theatrical release?
No, I mean, I'm a couple months back.
I don't know that deeply.
A couple months back in sort of my preparation for Damn You Hollywood and Atomic Blonde, I had seen that the movie was based on a graphic novel. And I thought, hey, wouldn't it be fun to read the graphic novel before seeing the movie and talk about it? And we rarely get to discuss timely graphic novels that have been optioned outside of Marvel and DC that have been optioned into feature films. A lot of times, people go to the movies and they see these movies and they're based on graphic novels and no one's ever heard of the books before. So I thought, hey, let's make a big deal of this.
Yeah, and the great thing is we get to cover the book tonight. Tomorrow you get to discuss the film. So you are. That'll be interesting. One of the more prominent books that I can remember that I didn't realize was a comic at first, became a movie, was 300. I have yet to read 300. I've really wanted to, but I haven't seen the movie either. But from what I understand, both are very well. It's lauded pretty heftily. A lot of people say that the book was good and the film adaptation of the book was just as good. So one of these days,
I'll tell you what, Jesse, our first source material of 20.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Let me go to the schedule.
Here he goes, folks.
Look at him go.
There he goes.
January, how do you want to do this? When do you want to get back to work here? You want to go January 1st? That's New Year's Day. January 8th?
Sounds great. We'll bring in 2018 with a Frank Miller book, isn't it, Ronnie?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Hang on. Source material 300 by Frank Miller and Create. And then on trial. Well, you know what? I'll do that. I'll put the on trial for Tuesday.
Are you going on trial 300?
Yeah. No, I mean,
oh,
I went
wow.
Thursday. I don't want to change days. On trial. Yeah, why discuss these things with Sean? On trial 300. Okay.
Best of luck, Sean.
Straight away.
All right. Okay, well, there you go. So look forward to that there at the beginning of 2018. We're going to be discussing 300 right here on Source Material. Can't wait to talk about it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a quick synopsis of what we have here in the coldest winter, okay? This is straight from the coldest – or I said coldest winter, the coldest city. This is straight from thecoldestcity.com. Berlin, November of 1989. Communism is collapsing. And soon, both East and West will tear down the Berlin Wall. But there is one last situation for MI6, Britain's intelligence service, to resolve. 2 weeks ago, an undercover MI6 officer was killed in Berlin. He was carrying information from a source in the East, a list that contains the name and details of espionage, every espionage officer in the city on all sides. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody knows something. But no list was found on his body. MI6 sent Lorraine Broughton, an experienced... What, Lorraine? What? Sorry. MI6 sent Lorraine Broughton, an experienced spy with no ties to Berlin, to recover the list. But Lorraine walked into a powder keg of social unrest, counter-espionage, defections gone bad, and secret assassination. Then, on the night the Berlin Wall fell, her superior, MI6's senior officer in the city, was shot dead in the street. Now Lorraine has returned to London to tell her story, and nothing is what it seems. So there you go. That's the hook. That is what we're getting into. Now, like I said, I'm not going to get in. Me and the guys have already agreed. I agreed that this is going to be a short podcast. We're going to kind of discuss our thoughts on the book. We'll probably give away the ending, but we're not going to go in and give you every twist, turn, and oh my goodness, who did this, and can you believe that so-and-so did this, because I don't want to fully spoil everything, just in case you're listening to this episode right now before you watch the movie or read the book. Let's go ahead and we'll talk about the art style. Okay, that was my first thing I think I had on the list. Mark, what do you think here? You do your best to kind of describe what you saw, and if it took you out, kept you involved, did it matter, did you give a crap? What's your thoughts?
Look, I like the artwork. I thought the artwork fit the genre. I thought the artwork fit the of the sort of Cold War era art of that time. Very angular, like everything's like in a lens, being shot from like far away almost, you know, or it's hard for me to describe. But if you think about like posters and artwork from that era, you can kind of see how a lot of this artwork was that.
I can see that.
You guys have any? Okay, I was gonna say, do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. So I like the fact that they use that kind of art. You know, black and white's not my favorite thing. It's not the most engaging. But, again, for a 1989 spy type, you know, folksy feel that I thought added to the story. I don't want to read a ton of black and white stuff, but I would say this, again, fit the story. So as far as the artwork making it the story hard to follow, some of the characters looked a little undistinguishable, but yeah,
yes, I agree. My goodness, I wish I could tell you how many times I had to go back a couple panels and be like, okay, is that this guy right here? Because I really don't want to miss out on the fact that he just died. And now what the heck's he doing in this panel here? Three pages after I was, you know, every once in a while I had to double check myself.
Well, having seen the movie, it was a little easier for me to follow the narrative because other than this features 100% less action than the movie did. I mean, literally 100. It's like, when they adapted this thing, it was like, let's literally do the entire story word for word, throw in scenes. Oh, actually, I want to play this clip now. So
do it.
You have this, you have this comic, this graphic that is utterly devoid of any action, right? One person, I think, gets shot towards the end. That's it. That's as fun as it gets in terms of action.
Mm-hmm.
And it got optioned. It got optioned. It got developed into a movie for American audiences. And they literally took the same bare bone script. Literally every other scene is Charlize Theron beating the fuck out of. She's just on a rampage.
Oh, man.
And it reminded me.
Not what we got in this comic.
No, distinctly different. So that idea of, you know, of having something that's a little bit more cerebral, you know, something that really makes you think, and sort of dumbing it down for American audiences and throwing in explosions and violence and everything else, it reminds me of this Eddie Izzard bit.
We've got known in Britain for making the smaller films, smaller, you know, recently we've been pulling out of that into the more Trainspotting area, but the smaller films are kind of, you know, Room with a View with a Staircase and a Pond type movies. Films are very fine acting, but the drama is rather sort of subsumed, or a word like that. sub something or other. You know, just sort of folded in, and everything's people opening doors. What? Well, what is it, Sebastian? I'm arranging matches. Well, I thought you. I'd better go. Yes, I think you'd better have. Ooh. And you can't eat popcorn to that. You're going. Whereas if the film did any little bit of business in America, if the film did, you know, some decent bit of business, then Hollywood would take it, and they'd remake it, and they'd up the budget by $50 million, and it would be called The Room with a View of Hell. Staircase of Satan. Pond of Death. And have people open the door going, you're fucking in here all the time. All the time you're in here to fucking matches. In here to fucking matches. To fucking learn and fucking. You don't talk to me that way. You don't talk to me that way. You fuck my wife. 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 I am your wife. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. I say again, you fuck my wife. All right, yes, I fuck your wife. I am your wife and I fucked her. Die, you cunt. Fucking matches, I can't get on. Oh no, space monkeys are attacking. A whole new part of the film that wasn't in the original.
So you see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah,
it?
Dude. Absolutely. My gosh. I wondered if when they adapted this, if they took it to another level. Now, I mean, I want you to go ahead and tell what, or expand upon one of the things that you mentioned in the about the movie was more, you said style over substance. Now when I hear somebody say that, I think of 300, which was, well, I don't know. So, that was really action packed from what I understand. So I don't know if that's a good example. Plus, hey, never seen the movie, but the, you know, there are some movies that are very stylistic in the way that they're presented. We look at this book in the art style that it's presented, and it's very toned. Black and white's pretty toned down. It's Berlin. It's 1989. It's November. It's cold. You can almost feel how cold it is. Clearly, that's in the title, The Coldest City. So I surely believe that that's on purpose. But was that present? Did they try and bring that over or breach that over into the film as well?
I'm going to do my best job here of not breaking up. Got to talk into my microphone.
Okay.
Let me know if I am breaking up at all.
Sure.
But you have to kind of be – you have to sort of know what the sort of German discotheque industrial club musical set of the 1980s was like.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you're mute now.
When I say
– there you go. You're back.
So, like – when I say style over substance, the plot of the movie, just like the plot of this comic, is kind of, okay. But the and the music all make up for kind of a substandard plot.
Okay. Okay, I got you. I got you. So, yeah, they took it to, it sounds like they took it to the umpteenth level. Just like Eddie Izzard educated us on there. Ronnie Adams, what do you think of the art style of this book, man?
Found it rather bland, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I was constantly forever getting characters mixed up. I don't know. Black and white usually, if you're going to do black and white, you got to do some characteristics of each person, in my opinion. You got to make them look different. Everybody looked the same, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you got to start. For me, it was picking out, okay, that guy's got a mustache. Remember that. That guy has glasses. Remember that. And I think, honestly, that's probably what's going through the artist's mind as well. You know, he's like, I got to make this guy look different from so-and-so. Well, making him tall versus short's not going to do it. You've got to add some distinguishable features.
Right. Put a scar in there. Put a larger nose or something. It just, I don't know. Coming from somebody that's not in the comic book business, I know that sounds harsh, but it was bland to me, and it didn't really bring anything to the table, in my opinion.
Okay. I can understand that. I echo what you guys are saying here in regards to it. It was tough to make – you know, figure out who was who. I will give them credit for making it feel like it's probably supposed to be in Berlin at that point in time.
I want to reiterate, I like the art. I thought the art fit the story.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Stephen Perkins. So, and he had one medium. I mean, it was pen. I assume ink, just ink and paper. I mean, it looked good for what it was, for sure. In my opinion, I think it looked decent. It wasn't horrible. Just that there could have been more detail. Would you agree with that, Ronnie?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it looked good. I mean, I thought, you know, the guy's a good artist, but it lacked detail. Yeah, could have had a lot more detail for me. But, you know, that's what I look for.
All right.
But, you know, I don't feel that the art gave really, you know, brought anything to the table on it.
All right, let's switch it back over to Mark. What do you think of the story overall? You know, we it's 180-some pages, I think, or 170-some pages of story in a trade paperback form. This wasn't set out in issue form, for what I understand. So how about the story, my man? What'd you think?
There's nothing happens.
I came this close to bringing the comic up. I just didn't have time today because my wife didn't get home until like 15 minutes before this podcast started. But I wanted to sit down and I wanted to count the panels of people walking because that – No. Was a majority of this damn book was, okay, that guy's walking somewhere. Walk, 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 walk. Is that somebody following him?
Oh, they
walk,
did.
Walk, walk, walk.
So she
looks for
a list that does. She looks for a list that doesn't exist, and there may or may not be, in this version of the story, there her contact in Berlin may or may, and she's a double agent, but you don't find that out until the last part of the book, the last 20 pages.
Looking
at that, and I'm just like, all right. You know, and I don't want to give away. They added a different kind of twist to it. Like they were like, oh, the comic book has this twist where she's the double agent. Well, we can go one better.
Good. Because it just that needed that. I don't want to say this thing. I do not want to say it was predictable, but it, because there was just, I've seen spy movies.
But you're going, huh?
unfortunately I am. I mean, I've seen spy movies and, you know, I was expecting it. I was expecting this. Okay. What's going to be the twist? Yeah, there are twists in this book, but I mean, okay, I expected somebody to turn on somebody and do this, that, and the other. And people, I mean, throughout the book, they're talking about double agents and triple agents. Okay, well, yeah, something's going to happen. And, you know, most of the book, it starts out, she's being interviewed at the beginning about why this guy died or how this guy died and what her involvement was. And everybody, you know, these big wigs, it's almost like these big wigs already got it figured out themselves. They just want to hear her version of the story to see if she is going to trip up or if what she says falls in line with their theory. And of course, that's where we get the story, is her recounting of those days up to when the Berlin Wall fell and her superior got shot. Ronnie, how about you, man? What'd you think, dude?
Negative Nancy here. I just thought it was super predictable. I mean, I kind of knew that she was going to be the double agent at the end. Spoiler alert. Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin anything.
No, we done gave it away. We told them at the beginning.
It was just one of those things where, it was like nothing happened. A lot of people walked. Nothing happened. I'm a double agent. Yeah, saw that coming. I hate to say that, but I did. Because they had
Mark
to go somewhere with it. They had to
yeah.
go somewhere with it, and that's where they went. And you know, and I just bless their hearts. I mean, it's just one of those things where I'm sorry. I'm on the loss for words because I wanted to say something positive about it. I mean, but at this point, I don't know. I was just like, man, it was meh, you know, it was that.
Mm-hmm. Mark, the political climate that this takes place in, I mean, I would probably safe to say Ronnie doesn't talk about politics. I know you did in the past on purpose there, Mark.
Why would you do that?
Do you think that adds a very good element to this story, the whole political climate at the time of the Berlin Wall coming down?
Back to the style over substance thing. You know, we all just went on this rant about how, like, there's hardly a plot, there's hardly a story to be had here, but
yeah,
the setting makes it interesting. You know, the little bit of tension there is in this story and the trouble she finds herself in here and there. So the fact that she's in Berlin days before the Berlin Wall is going to fall down, you know. You know what's really funny? The movie starts off with Reagan, and I'm going to do a bit of Family Guy here. You know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Tear down that wall. Reagan, smash. But, you know, there's where it's just like, you know, where it sets the political and social climate of the movie, and then it's like, you know, oh, you know, the Berlin Wall's about to fall down, this is the end of communism, et cetera, et cetera. But this is not that story. And so
you have this
sort of cloak and dagger, spy versus spy, Cold War era story in the in the death cries of the Cold War. Which is, I think, is an interesting idea. It's just not a very interesting story that they told.
Listen,
like, if you remove it, it's like, what is the world? You know, it's almost like they wanted to write a love letter to the end of communism, and that's as far as the thinking on it went.
Okay. Ronnie?
I'm all about the Cold War. I'm all about the Cold War spy story. I like spy stories. I like cloak and dagger stuff. I think it's interesting. I really do. This was not interesting. She's looking for a list that doesn't exist, and at the end, there was just, like I said, you say there's substance. I don't find any substance in this, other than the history of the era that it's happening in. And that's a great era to have a story in. Great era. I mean, there's so much junk that happened.
So if we were to say there's more sizzle than steak, Ronnie would say, well, there's sizzle, all right, but I'll see a single bit of steak on the plate.
Right.
Somebody remembered the butter, forgot the steak.
Well, they forgot the butter on this one too, I think.
I understand where you're coming from there. I don't know. I'm not a political guy, so all I know about the Berlin Wall was where I was probably at when it went down, which was in my room watching it on my Montgomery Ward's TV, and then probably soon after turning on my Nintendo and playing some Super Spike Volleyball. That's probably
right.
It. I think I just watched CNN's The 80s, and they were talking about the Berlin Wall falling. They did a whole it was a whole episode on Reagan's presidency, and I mean, it was interesting. But I didn't realize that, you know, it was – this crap wasn't like – it sounds like they knew it was going to happen in this book. And it was just so weird. Do either of you know much about the Berlin Wall, and you can educate me as to why the wall was in place in the first place?
Without getting into a lot of specifics – without getting into a lot of specifics, and again, this is not, you know this is not my area of expertise. I mean, you call Robert Winfrey, I'm sure he'll explain it to you in detail, and we'll be here for another 2 hours. But basically, it came out of World War II.
Dang it!
The Russians wanted a kind of like a safe zone, like the whole concept of Napoleon before that, and they wanted a buffer zone. And the fact that they lost the most amount of people, I think, in World War II, in terms of combatants, you know, they were like, okay, well, that's part of the agreement. So Germany was divided into sort of like the West half and the Russian half, and the Berlin Wall is what separated it.
Okay, all right. Very.
If you want, I can quickly wiki it, and we can like get some specifics.
Do it, man. Let's see what we got, because, I mean, I don't know. It really doesn't pertain to the story, but I feel like since I don't know much about the politics of the region, maybe that goes into why I don't enjoy it as much.
All right. The Berlin Wall was a guy who Hogan screamed at from – no.
Hulk Hogan!
It's the wall.
It's the wall. And it was amazing telescopic sight.
Wow.
The Berlin Wall was a guarded concrete barrier that physically and ideologically divided Berlin from 1961 to 1989, constructed by the German Democratic Republic, East Germany. Starting on August 13, 1961, the wall completely cut off by land West Berlin from surrounding East Germany and from East Berlin until government officials opened it in November of 1989. Its demolition officially began on June 13th. The barrier included guard towers placed along the large concrete walls, which circumscribed a wide area known as the Death Strip. Contained anti-vehicle trenches. The Eastern Bloc claimed that the wall was erected to protect its population from fascist elements conspiring to prevent the will of the people in building a socialist state in East Germany. So, yeah, basically what I said before. In practice, the wall served to prevent the massive emigration and that had marked East Germany and the communist Eastern Bloc during the post-World War II.
Okay.
You got an idea of what we're talking about here?
Yeah. A better idea of the setting for sure. All right. Well, let's go ahead.
Does that help you get into it anymore?
I don't know, man. Here's the thing. I usually read these things. I'll read these stories once or twice. Well, definitely once. I'll let my listeners know. I do read the books once.
At least.
Like our Sergeant Rock story, I read that, I think, a good two times. This one, I was like, man, I'm going to have to go back and read this thing. And I knew it was going to be an undertaking to go back, reread it, and make sure I absolutely understood everything. To where I was like, okay, here's maybe this twist, or maybe I missed something here. But it really doesn't matter, because the whole story that's being told to you is just an outright lie in the end anyway.
Yep.
At
the end of the day, Kevin Spacey's character ended up verbal Kent, ended up being Kaiser Soze, and you're left.
Exactly. Exactly. He gets up. He walks away. He has no limp.
You have no idea if anything he told you was real at all, and it basically you just watched his cosplay happen.
Exactly.
Yep.
I've watched that movie one time. Usual Suspects, ladies and gentlemen. Movies like that make me go like, okay, maybe there's a reason for me to go back and watch it again just because, oh, big twist ending and he's been acting the whole way. But it's all fabrication. But again, it was done better in The Usual Suspects, which came out, what, in the 90s?
Well, again, The Usual Suspects was a very Americanized story. There's lots of gunfire. There's lots of explosions. There's lots of, give me the keys, you fucking motherfucker. What the fuck? there's Benicio Del Toro mumbling into a microphone. that's my favorite part of it. You guys remember that, right? I'm not just imagining this happened.
What was it again?
They're in the lineup, and they're all having to repeat the line,
oh, yeah.
"Give me the keys, you motherfucker."
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
Says,
yeah.
Give me the keys, you motherfucker.
That was all ad lib. I mean, like the voice and everything was ad-libbed by Benicio Del Toro. And to my knowledge, that was his idea.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there's another bit where he says something in the movie, and everyone's like, and no one can understand him, and he keeps asking him to repeat himself.
Oh, man. Well, okay, I think we've answered this question, but I'll throw it around to you guys. I mean, Ronnie Adams... So this story did not stand out amongst the ones we've read so far. Where would you put this, I guess I would say, in relation to what we've covered so far through 2017? It didn't rape your childhood.
No, my childhood was safe on this one.
No one turned into a building.
That's right.
No one turned into a building. That was good. It's a blink in history. It was like in the history of this show. It's, you know,
okay,
with me. I can say that I read it, and that's about it.
Okay. All right. I respect that. How about you, Mark? What do you think, man?
I mean, it's fine. You know, it was better than Iron Fist. It was better than Wacky Raceland. What is
kicking me in the nuts
there?
Is better than Wacky Raceland.
What did we read something recently where we didn't like that either, but it has like the other stuff. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Revolution was fine. It was not as fun.
Revolution
as
wasn't bad.
Oh, we read Tarzan and the Planet of the Apes, and we were all like,
yeah, that sucked.
Now, I read that twice. The only reason I read that twice is because you guys know I'm a sucker for time travel and anything else that happens around that. That shit ain't happening in this story.
Okay. Let me go ahead and say this. I'm looking back at the last couple of things that we've, you know, like what we've read over the summer. Most of what we've read over the summer was pretty good, just as a quick review. The Guardians book was good. The Aliens book was good. Nightcrawler was fine. The Hecatia prompted a really fun discussion. Flashpoint was fine.
Yeah.
Poison Ivy was fine. Revolution was a little silly, but, you know, we got through it. So I'm not going to count that. So really the only thing that out of the summer stories that we've read, the only thing that sucked worse than this was Tarzan. This was just bland. This was just kind of boring.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
No.
I didn't spend this entire episode doing the Scarlet Pumpernickel bit. So I think that tells you what I thought of it.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark Radulich. Would you recommend this to, let's say, 5 out of 6 Kate Beckinsale stalkers?
Waka waka. I would recommend this to my dad or Winfrey, or, you know, somebody who tends to be a bit more cerebral, doesn't need things to be all splogy and punchy. You know, they're one of, like, guys like those don't necessarily need for Charlize Theron to punch her way through Berlin. And they might enjoy this sort of thing. You know, like, my dad doesn't necessarily always have to see, you know, doesn't have to see things that are filled with action. So, and, you know, history buff. He was certainly the Cold War and the events of the fall of the Berlin Wall were certainly more meaningful to him than I was in fucking junior high with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
imploring us to understand how much of an historical event was happening in our lives, and we were all just sort of staring at him, looking back, like, we don't care. because we were dumb kids. We had no idea what the significance was. So that's the short answer. That's the sort of a long answer to a short question. I would recommend this to people who like sort of thoughtful, thoughtful stories set in the Cold War.
Okay. Ronnie Adams, I think I know your answer to this. So here's what I'm going to do. Instead of asking that question, I'm going to read you four reviews, and you're going to take on the Robert Winfrey hat real quick. And these are all reviews that are, of course, posted on the coldestcity.com website. And you can reply to them however you want. You can just say, I don't think so. You don't have to elaborate if you don't want to. But, you know, I'm going to let you in. I'm going to let you in on what these reviews say. And you tell me if you agree or disagree. All right, you ready?
Okay.
All right. The Village Book Review says that the coldest city, bodies pile up and twists abound, fans of Jean Le Carre spy thrillers will definitely enjoy this dense tale of intrigue.
Yeah, all two bodies pile up. And Dense is definitely right.
Dense.
That's them for saying this is good. I disagree with them completely.
Okay. All right. We'll leave that there. No need to continue. We'll go on to Graphic Policy, who says, once I sat down to read it, I had to keep going to see how it ended. If you like spy / noir reads, this should be at the top of your list.
No.
All right.
It was a struggle for me to finish.
I pushed myself through it. I certainly wasn't like – I was. Here's the thing. I was waiting for the twist. I was waiting for the big twist. So I was like, okay, something's going to happen. I know something's going to happen. Okay, well, that happened, and I'm not too impressed. Okay, that happened. Okay, well, I kind of expected that. But I was waiting for – here's what I thought. There's nothing new that happens in this book that I haven't seen already. That's what I was hoping would happen. I thought they would come out – oh, man.
About a quarter of the way through the book, I said, she's a spy. She's a double agent.
Yeah.
And at the end, she's a double agent. And I was like, well,
yeah.
That sucks.
All right. A tight, tense book, the Stumptown Trade Review, by the way. A tight, tense book that focuses heavily on the gathering of intelligence. The Coldest City will keep you guessing until the last page.
Guessing at what? I already knew.
All right, last one. Beautifully subtle, with a fantastic climax, The Coldest City is a sly espionage tale readers will indulge in through the end. Johnston is a great writer and has a great handle on this genre.
No.
All right.
No. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him because, you know, obviously I've never written a comic book and never had one published or anything like that. But I don't think he there are certain things that people look for. Well, I'm not going to say people. I'm going to say that I look for in a spy story.
Uh-huh.
And some sort of spying would have to happen in it to be for me to consider a spy story. There was a whole lot of talking. There was a little bit of punching. A couple of people died. But there was no spying. There was no espionage. There was no, you know, it was all very predictable. And when you when you go for a good spy story, you know, you want to go for the unpredictable. Not the fantastic, not even James Bond. James Bond was one of the greatest spies ever. But you don't even have to go as far as him, you know, with the cars and the pins and stuff like that. But, you know, I watched, you know, I've read some on the Cold War and stuff like that. And in the different gadgets they used or, you know, things like that. There was nothing like that in there. It was an interview. It was a big flashback. It was a boring, just like you said, it was a boring Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't, you know, it just couldn't keep my attention. And not because of the Americanization of Hollywood, you know, of movies or anything like that. You know, you take just like Eddie Izzard said, it's not because of that. It's not because there was no explosions or guns or, you know, or anything like that. It was just the fact that it just didn't have any flash. And, you know, not that I need, like, craziness to happen to make a good movie. It just didn't have any, you know, just like you said, didn't have any substance to me. It could to other people, but not to me.
All right. All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion here, unless either of you, Mark, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we get into plugs?
Nope.
Oh, that's a good answer. Ronnie Adams, how about you?
No, I'm good to go.
All right. All right, well, let's go ahead and turn it over to the schedule himself, Mark Radulich. What do we got upcoming on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network?
Well, Bumblebee movie adds WWE superstar John Cena in lead role and gets new December 2018 release date. God damn it. Bumblebee Bumblebee will now hit theaters the same day as Aquaman. I'm about ready to dump stuff off my desk.
Oh, wow.
This can't...
That is going to put a lot of stress on Mark Radulich to figure out which one to pick.
Do they want to make a failure on their hands?
I'm so upset right now. The Transformers spinoff was set to debut June 2018, but has now been pushed back to December 21st, the same day as fucking Aquaman. Oh,
wow.
God.
Wow.
Gone.
I'm so mad.
I mean, this should be a no-brainer for you, Mark. I mean, Aquaman, all the way. But
yeah, but I got to cover both of these now.
You really?
Oh,
know,
boy.
I don't even want to look at my schedule anymore. Stuff's happening on the Radulich and Broadcasting. Bye. No, just kidding. All right. Tomorrow night on Damn You
just pull
Hollywood.
Pull it
easily. Easily.
We do stuff.
We do stuff. Click. Episode ends. No outro music. No nothing.
All right. So tomorrow night, a continuation of the subject. We move from the book to the film. Damn You Hollywood reviews Atomic Blonde. Charlize Theron punching the fuck out of Berlin. It's awesome.
Yeah.
The Metal Hammer of Doom. We're going to finally do Unleash the Archers, Apex. And
yes,
for shits and giggles, and because I wanted to find a Charlize Theron movie that I could put on trial, I could logistically put on trial, we're going to look at 2003's The Italian Job, starring Charlize Theron and Mark Wahlberg. Next week, right here on this very show, we're going to... We got a couple of Voltron shows to look at. So right here on Source Material, we're going to look at Voltron from the Ashes. Damn You Hollywood's going to review The Dark Tower, and that is it for the summer, baby doll. Damn You Hollywood, we'll do one more show after that, and then we are off for a few weeks. Metal Hammer of Doom will be reviewing one of Ron.
You cut out, Mark. Give it to us one more time.
Oh,
I'm
sorry. Ronnie Adams. Metal Hammer of Doom will be reviewing one of Ronnie Adams' favorite bands, Goat Whore.
You can't say that because people might believe that.
I wish I would have heard him the first time and then made him repeat it again on purpose.
The album.
Thanks, Jesse.
Soul Ascension. So Ronnie Adams will be on to tell us how much he loves Goat Whore.
Oh,
and then,
please.
not going to happen, guys.
And then on Thursday, as I said, we have a couple of Ultron shows. Well, this is the other one. Robert Cooper and myself will be looking at Voltron Legendary Defender Season 3, which will have dropped on Netflix the previous Friday. So that's what we got going on. Last week was all military all the time. We have one of our second film commentary, G.I. Joe, the movie. That was fun. I unfortunately
chuckles.
Fortunately was sick Monday, so I could not participate in Sergeant Rock Between Hell and a Hard Place, but it's a very good book. I did read it. We reviewed Dunkirk. Jesse and I and to a degree Robert Cooper reviewed In This Moment. Spoiler alert, it sucked. And and then Andrew Graham and I had a very serious discussion of the Netflix series, documentary series, Five Came Back on TV Party Tonight / Because You Made Me. It was a split. Two shows in one, baby dolls.
Nice.
That's all I got. I'm actually going to cut out, guys.
Later, man. Thank you very much for showing up tonight, and we appreciate it. I'm glad you made it back here, man. We'll be talking to Mark Radulich there next week. Ronnie Adams.
You.
Good sir. Please plug your stuff, sir.
I got a little show called the Screaming Boy Podcast, and we are not recording right now, but we are on live on the Radio Lynch Broadcasting Network. Thank you so much, Mark.
March.
But we have done several different live shows to keep in touch with the Radio Lynch Broadcast Network, the theme weeks. So this past one was some sort of military something or other, and I think that's what was the name of the show was.
It's still up. We've never changed it.
That's
how it shall be referred to from here on out.
That's fine, because I mean, I was so flustered with the whole thing of not being able to, you know, having to pay to be on my own show. gosh, that was just stupid. It's one of those things where that's fine, because it ain't going to get much better than that. But we talked a lot about G.I. Joe. We talked about a little bit about, you know, some of the Vietnam War TV shows that were on when we were younger in the 80s and the late 80s. And we just talked about, you know, our families in the military and, you know, how, you know, that may or may not have impacted our choices to not go into the military or go into the military or anything like that. It's some really good discussion. And then at the end, things went off the rail, and we decided we wanted to rewrite Mayberry a little bit. So that was hilarious, and definitely needs to be made into a show.
So much fun. So much fun. Anything else, man? Did you already give us your Twitter, whatchamacallit?
Oh.
Social media?
You can find us on any sort of military. You can find us on any sort of social media, which Facebook, you just search Screaming Boy Podcast. Twitter, you can search at Screaming Boy PR. And then Instagram is Screaming Boy Podcast. You can reach us at info@screamingboy.com for the time being. We will be revamping and redoing the website very soon. So it's going to be coming down very, very shortly.
All right, very good.
We'll have that back up. But coming up soon in September, I will be going to the Greensboro Comic Con and representing Screaming Boy Podcast the best of my abilities there. Just doing a couple live updates from Facebook, taking some pictures and things like that, just to see what's going on. And then the week after that, Jesse and I will be going to, I guess we can call it the River City Comic Con.
Yeah, River City, RC3, River City Comic Con.
Yeah, we'll be going to that and Remix Pro Wrestling the night before that.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, we got a lot on our plate there that weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I'm still kind of trying to figure out how I want to participate in some way. So I'm usually stopping in at the comic shop, talking to Jordan, asking him, okay, hey, what can I do? Can me, you, the Kapow guys do something? Well, we're kind of hem-hawing around trying to figure out what exactly and how exactly we're going to be participating. I do know that we're going to be in a whole new venue at this Comic-Con, which will be very interesting. It's a large recreation center for Marietta College, so it'll be interesting to see how we go. He's
very cool.
He's nervous, I'm sure, but I know that usually those shows are a lot of fun, so I look forward to doing that. Anything else, sir, before I go into mine?
No, that's it. Go for it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, go give that Radulich in Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. We are at home on blogtalkradio.com, but you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn Radio and Spreaker. Radio, as well as our good buddies over there at W2Mnet.com, Sean Garmer and the gang. They've been reposting our stuff over there. I love being on. I love hanging out at a new place and you know, checking out everybody that's had the opportunity to listen over there on through Spreaker and through that website, W2Mnet.com. They also supply us with some great wrestling content here on the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network. So if you've been checking out some of the more recent Wrestling to the Max episodes that have been showing up here, that's all those guys. So we also have movie reviews and all that other stuff, all the stuff Metal Mark has already covered. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings our discussion of The Coldest City, the book that the movie Atomic Blonde is based off of, to a close. We hope you enjoyed yourself. We hope that, you know, listen, we may have bagged on the book. It's still up to you to read it and make your own decision. If it sounds like a fun, you know, I don't know about a fun, you're pushing it, but if it sounds like some good content that you might be interested in reading, don't take our word for it. Go out there, buy yourself a copy, support this comic book creative team, and go from there. We absolutely advise you 100% to make your own decision. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jesse Starcher. You can follow me at Stiznarchy on Twitter or at SourceMacCast on Twitter. That's the show's Twitter. And now, the quest begins to find a new, no, not a new one, but an outro music that I have no – do you remember what he said was going to be the outro music? This is my weak spot. You think that I would pay attention? You think that I'm going to have to scroll up now? Here we go. Mark Rattlitch, give us some. What'd he say here? Okay. Let's take a look and see if that's even anywhere on the NYD. What in the world is that? That's not that. You know what I'm going to do? If I don't find it, I'm just going to start pushing stuff on the – here it is. Ladies and gentlemen, as I said before, this podcast is ending now. Have a good one.
Come to it first, fast for me. Singe ich ein Lied für dich von 99 Luftballons auf ihrem Weg. Horizont, denkst du vielleicht grad an mich, dann singe ich ein Lied für dich von 99 Luftballons, das